Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. The podcasts are there. And we are also on SoundCloud. So you can go there as well and listen to the interviews from 2018. At the present, we're in the process of uploading the rest of those interviews, but they're all available at richarddugan.com. So I encourage you to take a listen. We'll also link to our guests' website so that you can get more information, continue to learn more about what it is that we have talked about in the past hour or so, and we encourage you to have fun with that. It is my pleasure. I absolutely love these folks. They have become very good friends of ours. I say ours, my wife and mine, as well as this radio program. We've had the great pleasure of visiting them up at a wonderful, beautiful place when we were on our vacation in 2016, which seems so long ago. We have Nayaswami Jyotish and Devi with us from Ananda Village, and we want to welcome both of them to the program today. Thank you so much for joining us via Skype.
Thank you, Richard. It's really nice to connect with you again.
Yes, it's great to be on the show and great to be able to talk with you again.
I have to say that during the Christmas season of 2017, I couldn't think of anything other than that trip that we took for that week, and just remembering how much fun and how much joy we had taking our time, driving where we went, and especially coming up to Ananda Village and spending the day there, having lunch with you, as well as a brief interview, and just getting an opportunity to experience what has been created and was one of the dreams of not only Paramahansa Yogananda, but also his disciple who has since passed, Swami Kriyananda, whose shrine we have also had an opportunity to see and experience as well. Just a beautiful piece of country, a wonderful place for people to, so to speak, get away from it all. It, as I said, it's one of those dreams, if you will, plans or dreams, if you will, that was put in motion many, many years ago. I'd like to start off, first of all, by asking how the two of you became associated. For those who haven't listened to the previous programs that we've done with you here on the program, how you two became acquainted, but also how you became acquainted with the teachings of Paramahansa and Kriyananda, as well as Ananda Village.
Well, maybe I'll start, Richard. I had just graduated from college, and I was really interested in the scope of human consciousness. So I studied psychology, and that didn't fulfill my quest at all. It just wasn't much scope there at all in psychology in the 1960s. So I came to San Francisco and began reading lots of different literature. And as part of that search, I came upon a great, great book, Autobiography of a Yogi. When I read that for the first time ever, there was somebody not only who talked about the kind of consciousness that I knew was possible, which was infinite and connected with everything, not only talked about it, but had experienced it. And that was palpable to me. And then soon after that, I learned about a direct disciple of his that was living in San Francisco, went and knocked on his apartment door and met him in 1967.
Who was that?
That was Swami Kriyananda.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so... then I quickly started studying with him and ended up becoming first his assistant and then co-founder of Ananda.
And Davey?
Yeah, my story is not too different. I had just finished college too. And mind you, this was 1969. So it was the hippie era, and there was a lot of experimenting on all different levels. Of course, you know, we think of it as the drug era, Timothy Leary and all that, but it was more than that. People were really looking, our generation, the baby boomers, were really looking for what was real. You know, we had all been born after the terrible conflagration of the Second World War, and I think to sort of the people who came out of the war, the soldiers, the families, they wanted to leave all that behind and build material security. And our generation came and said, you know, we're not that interested in material security. And we're looking for meaning, for something to make a better world. And then Yogananda's, his book was autobiography of a yogi, came out in 1946. And the timing wasn't random. It was like, here was a way to move forward out of that terrible period of history. And it just spoke to our generation, but I think it speaks eternally. It's eternal truths. Mm-hmm. And so I read the book, and just last semester of college, heard about Ananda. I was in the Midwest in Wisconsin, of all places, and came out and met Swami Kriyananda, Adananda, and began going to his classes and learning the meditation techniques that he was teaching. And it just, you know, you can't explain why. It's just some karmic connection. But everything he taught and said and who he was, just, I knew this was what I had been looking for. This was the meaning, the truth, the way of life that I was looking for.
We're going to talk also about some books that you folks have written, as well as one in particular, Touch of Joy, and also an award that the two of you have picked up. And I'm going to save that for just a few more minutes. But I want to find out a little bit more about Ananda Village. Now, my wife and I, again, we've had that pleasure of being there and getting a tour of the area. And I got to tell you, I do miss the place, even though we were only there for such a short time. What is it that sets Ananda Village apart from some of the other, and I'll use the term, communal areas or facilities or what have you that sprang up, especially in the 60s and 70s, that may or may not even be around today? What is it that makes this place so unique? And it's not the only one of its kind under this dream of Paramahansa's.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that Yogananda did in his teachings was he said that these teachings need to be lived. They need to come into a person's business and his family. And he himself started out teaching children. He had a school in India. And so it wasn't just theoretical teachings, it was practical teachings. As part of that, he said that the ideal way to live is to gather together groups of people in small communities, like-minded people, in this case, people who are carrying on a spiritual search. And so Kriyananda really heard that message more than any other of his disciples, and dedicated part of his life to forming a community, and that formed Ananda. So it's formed on the principles of meditation, the attitudes that uplift the person, such as kindness, love, support, expanded feeling of unity with others, and so on. And so taking those principles and putting them into actual practice, from that central thought of joining together with other people, Ananda was founded. And it quickly drew a lot of people, and it was at the end of the era of communes and communities, as you said. At the time, there were hundreds of them, but very, very few have survived. Ananda has not only survived, but flourished, and it's now spread throughout the world.
And you know, I was just, interesting you asked the question. I just read a quote this morning, one of the last pages of Autobiography of a Yogi, where Master is talking about what he called world brotherhood colonies. And it was really a big part of his mission. And what he was saying was, we can't, outer reforms have to, in society, can only begin by inner changes in the individual. He used the word, the anthropomorphic terms, society. What is it? It's just individuals. And so what the Ananda movement is, we have communities now all over the world, and a wonderful international community in Assisi, Italy. We have many, many groups starting up in India. And we in America, we have six very well-established communities. But really what we're trying to show is how people of all faiths, all cultural backgrounds, all religious leanings, all different lifestyles, you know, it's, we're really open to everyone who, without limitation, who really sincerely wants to take up the path of meditation, of yoga, of seeking truth. And it's, I know people now as dear friends from so many different backgrounds, and Ananda has given me that opportunity to really connect. And you start realizing we're all the same. There's no difference, whatever your background may be. We're all wanting the same thing. And communities such as Ananda, they're filled with that spirit, really, of universal unity of humanity.
I have to tell you that I guess the only phrase I can think of, because it's what comes to mind, is my heart swells with longing to return to Ananda Village and to that community. And I know that it's something that we're all searching for, because we, my wife and I, have both tried in various ways, wherever we've lived, to create and generate that kind of community, even if it's just a few people. And I'm thinking, too, and I think, Jyotish, you made the comment that it was small groups of people. And you're not talking about hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands or what have you of individuals. When you start growing beyond a certain level, I'm going to use the word intimacy, is lost. You don't know, for example, here in Santa Barbara, I get a real kick when I walk through a store or I'm walking down State Street and somebody that walks up to me who knows me and I know them says, "Hey, how you doing?" It's, well, gee, this is an interesting coincidence, but it was really nice that this person saw me, came up and said hello. And it can happen more than once in a given day. I had one situation where I went to three different places and the same person was in each of those places. And at the third location, I said, "Are you stalking me?" And it's just that you can't avoid people when you're in a smaller community. And there's also that connection when there are problems, when there are struggles and challenges. Even though I know that each one of us has our own certain level of pride, we have to set that aside and say, "Look, I need help. I'm struggling in a particular area, and can you assist?" So the small community, I know that putting a number on it is probably a difficult thing to do, but is there a limit to the size that Ananda Village might grow, and then you may need to start a new community, you know, several miles down the road or something like that? How, and I'm talking structure, I know we're talking about spiritual things as well, but I'm talking about structure of Ananda Village and this dream of Paramahansas. How big can these communities get? How small should they stay?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'll start with an amusing story. One that was reading a transcript of a talk of Yogananda, who was at that time in the talk speaking about communities. And he said, as it was transcribed, a community should be 5,200 people.
5,200
people. And I thought, boy, that is really big. I don't see that working. And what a strange number, 5,200. And then it struck me that whoever was transcribing made a mistake, that Yogananda had said 50 to 100. So between 50 and 100 people, not 5,200. But so that did give a number range. Now, Ananda Village has around 250 people. Mm-hmm. I would say that we have at one time had as many as 350 or 375. And honestly, that seemed like it was a little too big, because at a certain point, that sense of intimacy that you were talking about, of knowing everybody, not just knowing them superficially so you can say their names and, oh yeah, I saw you last year kind of thing, but you know the struggles that they've had, the stories that they have, and they're really friends. At a certain point, that begins to not be possible, and therefore the community begins to split into subgroups. It will do that naturally anyway, but you need to have a community small enough so that everybody truly does feel connected and a part of each other's story. So I would say that the maximum is maybe 300 people. Mm-hmm. But as Yogananda said, all of this is Ananda Village is our largest one. All of our other communities are in that range of 50 to 100 residents. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it isn't really quantitative, as we're trying to put a number on it. It's qualitative. Mm-hmm. And as we're saying, Richard, one of the just beautiful things about living in a spiritual community is you let down that sense of pride, you use the word, you know, where I'm okay, there's nothing wrong with me, and you feel safe. I remember the first day I came to Ananda, really not, and it was pretty much nothing existed at that point. The thought came to my mind, I don't have to play games anymore. I don't have to put on a front. I can just be myself, and people can take it or leave it. And it's so beautiful to be able to have that trust that other people are your friends. They're not trying to judge you or take advantage of your weaknesses or if you're down. You know, music is a very big part of our life. Swami Kriyananda was a gifted composer, and he wrote, I think, over 400 pieces of music. And some of them are instrumental and more serious. Some of them are, most of them are for choral performances, for choirs. And so every community has a choir. And for me, it's one of my favorite things. I'm not in the choir. I don't have time to go to rehearsals, but they're open to whoever wants to sing. You don't have to be particularly talented, but it's more about the spirit of it. And I love to watch the choir. I love to listen to them, but I love to also watch them because I know each person there, and I know, gosh, her husband has a terminal disease, and look at her face. She's radiant. This person just had a big financial setback, and she's just filled with joy, and you just see the ability of the human spirit to overcome. And that's one of the great, great gifts of living in community.
I think one of the other things that people need to understand is that, say, moving to Ananda Village, and I know there's a process in that, is not going off the grid. That is not the purpose of this, correct?
Absolutely. No, Ananda is highly connected. For instance, Davey and I, we travel all over the world. We're on the road half the time. And many, many people from Ananda travel a whole lot more than the typical person. The one thing that I would say takes us a little bit off the grid is that we don't suggest to people, we don't control it, but we don't suggest that they watch much television. Mm-hmm. It just is a big waste of time. And Yogananda said, in fact, that television produced a kind of downward pulling energy to the consciousness. But having said that, there are so many, many alternate ways to stay connected.
And when Jyotish says we travel all the time, we're not just mindlessly going from here to there. We're traveling to go to destinations, to teach, to share with other people. and so many of our members do that, but we're not off the grid technologically. We have a very, very dynamic website, nanda.org, that reaches really millions of people worldwide. And a couple of years ago, we tallied up, there were people from 202 different countries who tuned into it. And so it's really very connected. But so through the internet, we have wonderful online classes that people, again, from all over the world take them. But I think I do want to add, we are off the grid in a certain sense, that our values are not the values of kind of what's going on in the world. You know, like, oh my God, he said this and she said this, and who's telling the truth? But we try to be centered in ourselves. What's the truth of our own self? And we observe the world, but we don't get caught in it. So that's a difference.
Right. When we come back, we are going to dive right into both the book that we want to talk a little bit about, as well as this wonderful award. It's called the Global Peace Ambassador Award, and we're going to find out all about that, as well as Touch of Joy. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Jyotish and Devi from Ananda Village, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Nayaswami Jyotish and Devi from Ananda Village. There's an interesting question. Do you consider yourself disciples of Swami Kriyananda or Paramahansa Yogananda, the entire lineage that goes all the way back to the beginning of time? How would you put that?
Well, I would say I consider myself a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. That's what Swami Kriyananda urged us to do. He didn't want to have people consider him as the guru or be disciples of him. Having said that, he was certainly our lifelong teacher, and the great vast majority of what we have studied and know has come through him. So first, I would say I'm a disciple of Yogananda. Secondarily, I'm a student of Swami Kriyananda. And thirdly, I'm a part of an ancient lineage.
Yeah, I think towards the end of his life, Swami Kriyananda would often say, because he came to Yogananda when he was 22 and was his disciple, you know, for the next 65 years or so. So that's a life of discipleship. But Kriyananda would always say, I've gotten to the point, or at the end of his life, where I don't know where Kriyananda ends and Yogananda begins. So ultimately, the disciple and the guru, their consciousness, really becomes one. So it's not really an easy question to answer. When I tune into Swamiji, Kriyananda, it helps me to go deeper in my relationship as a disciple to Yogananda. So it's not either or, it's both and, I have to say.
And also, Nayaswami Jyotish and Devi serve as spiritual directors of Ananda Village, a global spiritual movement of people living yoga in their daily lives, and they are emissaries of Paramahansa Yogananda, the spiritual master who sparked a revolution of yoga and meditation in the West with his book, which I have read I countless times, not only in my teens and 20s, but in recent years. I have it via Audible. I also have it from the original cassettes, and the gentleman who read it through Recordings for the Blind when I was a client thereof. And I have to tell you both, I'm sure that you both get a sort of a thrill at times when you think about and remember the stories that he told. I mean, the one that always seems to come to mind, no matter what I'm thinking about, is about the Tiger Swami. That whole story was such a great thing. I love listening to it and revisiting it over and over again. And of course, I remember when I was reading the book, found out that it was being used as a textbook in colleges, and I'm going, wow, this is rather profound. This does not happen to a lot of people's books. It's a wonderful thing. Let's talk about this Global Peace Ambassador Award, because in November of 2017, the two of you received the award. You received the award at the United Nations Tillman Chapel in New York City for the inspiring ways that Ananda brings Paramahansa Yogananda's spiritual wisdom to life today. And that seems to be true in several different, I call them branches of the same tree, because Paramahansa founded the Self-Realization Fellowship. I'm also familiar with another a branch of that same tree, the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship, and so forth. And these all come from, if you will, the root, not just of Paramahansa, but of his gurus, those people that he, those saints, if you will, avatars that he followed. Talk to us about this this award that you received back in November of 2017.
Okay, Richard. Well, it was really, I have to say, one of the more beautiful, inspiring moments in our life. First of all, I'd never been to the UN before, and that whole United Nations complex in New York, it's inspiring to be there. It's really like it was created on a vision of world unity, of humanity coming together beyond national interests. And you can feel that it's kind of built on higher principles and idealism. And then the award we received was from a spiritual organization, which is an affiliate of the UN, led by a very fine man, Indian man, his name is Shomik Chowdhury. And the organization is called the International Organization for Social Development. And it's an affiliate representing the UN. So it took place in this beautiful non-denominational chapel with signs of symbols of all the world religions. And it really felt like we weren't getting the award. It was the award for the work that Ananda, hundreds and hundreds of people over the years have done to bring peace, to bring greater common understanding to people throughout the world. And it felt like, as I say, in this time that we live, which is so filled with confusion and divisiveness and separativeness, and it just felt like a statement that the world on a very high level needs and recognizes people to be ambassadors of peace and of understanding amongst all nations. And it was very profound and moving, not on a personal level, although that too, but more just kind of making a statement. And Mr. Chowdhury, after the beautiful ceremony, said to us, you know, we need to bring more spiritual values into the United Nations. It was started in that way, and now it's losing some of that original motivation. So it was really quite a extraordinary moment in recognition for the work that Yogananda, Swami Kriyananda, and Ananda has done in the world.
And Jyotish, would you like to share your observations?
Yes, it was. I think we went not expecting very much. You know, sometimes you have a sense of, you know, this is an organization as part of the UN. And we thought the ceremony would be a little perfunctory, but in fact, it was very spiritual. They had a choir from the Sri Chinmoy movement in New York that sang beautifully. They gave a second award to a humanitarian, a woman who from Iran, who had spent her life helping especially women, but people in refugee camps. And it was a very, very uplifted feeling in it. And one of the things that we said, we stressed, that we have been dedicated to, and Ananda dedicated to, is that if we're going to have peace on a global level, that has to start on an individual level. And so that individual peace for us starts with meditation, starts with the practices that allow you to feel and connect with the, your own peace and harmony and unity inside. And then if you can do that, then global peace or group peace follows naturally. But it can't start from outside. You could disarm everybody and they would start picking up sticks and stones and trying to beat each other that way if they have the consciousness of conflict. So it has to start inside on an individual level.
And I'll just add one final thing. One of my favorite prayers of Yogananda, which I read often, I've read often to myself over the years, Prayer for a United World. And so when we were given the opportunity to speak a little bit in this chapel, and there were several hundred people there, I said, I'd like to read these words of my guru, Prayers for a United World. And it was just thrilling to be able to utter his prayer for a world beyond national divisiveness there at the United Nations.
I know that in order for there to be peace on earth, it's got to start with me as an individual. And, you know, the guidance, I was going to use the word admonishment, but that's the wrong word. The guidance you give to people at Ananda Village to consider not watching television is going a long way to achieving and establishing that peace within, because I'm not a meditator, at least not in the traditional sense. I kind of adhere to what I believe it was Teresa of Avila said, that God is amongst the pots and the pans. So I consider myself meditating when I'm working on different things and I get in that zone. But when we get away from those kinds of things, and it's an irony that I happen to work in the broadcast industry and I am inundated daily by the news of the day, and I try as best I can to disconnect, and people get very frustrated with me, I have to tell you, when they ask me, so did you hear about thus and such? And I said, no, I didn't hear. Especially, for example, the stock market in the early part of February of 2018, and someone asked me, "Did you hear what the stock market did today?" I said, "No." He says, "You're kidding." No, I'm not kidding. I've been working. I've been producing radio shows or commercials or whatever it is that I've been doing. And then when they tell me, I'm going, "Oh, okay." You know, so what? You know, and so yeah, disconnecting from the outside world. In that sense, I mean, it's not a complete prohibition, I understand, but certainly it doesn't foster. But I also know that there are some great movies that people can watch. And I understand there's also a film, a documentary about Swami Kriyananda and Ananda Village. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, there are two films, but I think the one you're referring to is called Finding Happiness. And you can find it on many streaming venues. Just go to Finding Happiness movie. I think just Google that and you'll be led there. But it's a wonderful, wonderful film that shows the consciousness behind Ananda. The whole of the film was filmed at Ananda Village, so you get a sense physically of what it's like and socially what it's like. So anybody that's interested, and it's a wonderful way to spend an hour and a half. We also have a movie that will come out this spring called The Answer, which is the story of beautifully shot. It's gotten something like 25 international awards at film festivals, best picture, best photography, and so on. It's about Swami Kriyananda's search and then his meeting with Yogananda and the training that Yogananda gave him, shot by an Indian director and producer. And that will be coming out this spring called The Answer. So that's available too.
I can hardly wait.
Just very briefly, It's not the medium television or whatever. Think of it like diet. You know, you want food. You do need information. But if your diet consists only of junk food, you're going to get sick. And if your mental diet consists only of those things that are purposely arranged in order to rile you up and rile up your emotions, you're going to get mentally upset.
As you're sharing this, the thought of, you mentioned the awards that this film, The Answer, has won, and I can hardly wait for it to come out so that I can see it as well. But the question I have for you in that regard is, from your perspective, not only as emissaries and the directors, of course, of Ananda Village, but as individuals and even as a couple, a married couple, what do you consider the greatest reward in this life?
You mean the greatest goal that we should strive for?
I will tell you where my thoughts went when that question came to mind. That the greatest reward I could think of in my life would be that I helped someone, I assisted someone to live a better life, to find their life's purpose, to find a connection to the divine, to God, to the universal power, if you will, to make this a better place, to find peace within themselves, et cetera, et cetera. It brings to mind a book that actually led me to my first wife. It was written by the late Og Mandino, called The Greatest Miracle in the World, and it talked about rag pickers, but of the humankind. And this story dealt with one gentleman, the main character in the story, who came across an old man. And he kind of took him in, and this old man began to teach him about what it meant to be a rag picker of the humankind in terms of helping people and so forth, and changing their lives, if you will. And not by any means in a self-centered or selfish or what's in it for me kind of thing. It was just what he did. So that was kind of where my thoughts went when that question came to mind. And I'm wondering if you folks feel the same way, that the greatest reward is when people find the teachings, find their way, if you will, whether it's to Ananda Village or to the writings and music, etc., of Swami Kriyananda, or the writings and teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. And again, these are ageless teachings that makes them a better person, if you will.
Sure. Well, I agree very much with you, Richard, that I, for us, I'll speak for both of us, I think the greatest reward in outward activity is to give people tools and a vision of what the potential of life is, that we can live in a family life with ongoing harmony and support and love and fulfillment, that we can have a way to earn a livelihood that isn't a compromise, that we feel good about, that we feel like we're serving others, that we can, to help people. And, you know, as we were saying, we get to travel and teach all over the world, and it's just so rewarding. That's the word you started off using. To see how people's lives are changed and improved by even a little practice of this, of meditation or yoga, or just getting a clear overview of what life is all about. So that's one of the big rewards in our life, to help others. And then on an individual level, I can see, it's hard to see changes in yourself. You know, it's hard to see improvements. But I can feel within myself a greater ability just to be happy, as there's the expression, happy in your own skin. Just It's wherever you are, you feel at ease, you feel happy, you're enjoying the world around you, you're enjoying the people that come into your life, if they're wise or foolish, and just the ability to stand where you are and say, you know, I'm happy inside. And it's not to say everything's always perfect. We know it's never that way for long. But just to be able to, that's one of the rewards that I found in the way of life I've chosen, to find an ongoing ability just to get the enjoyment of helping others find their way, and to see an increasing ability in my own self to just be happy all the time. Hmm.
To that end, let's talk about Touch of Joy. And this is a work that the two of you have put out. Your new book illuminates Yogananda's teachings for spiritualizing daily life. And to that, I want to say, before I have you expound on this wonderful volume, and you have other volumes as well, including Touch of Light, but we're talking, of course, today about Touch of Joy. I have to say that up to this point in this interview, as we have been conversing, my mind, if not my body, so to speak, metaphorically speaking, has been transported away from having to deal with all of the stuff, the taxes and credit cards and bills, and I got to deal with this and I've got to deal with that and so forth. As I sit here listening to you, the two of you, it just, you know, I do envy the fact that you are there. and I wish I was there also, because it should be such a beautiful place. But the fact that I'm hoping people maybe get the same sense that we're not in the same space right now as we converse. Tell us about Touch of Joy and how this this work came about.
Well, Davey and I write a weekly blog, and it's short essays, generally about 500 words or so, so that people can read it within 5 minutes. So it's not long, doesn't take a long time. We've written that weekly blog since 2013, a few months after Swami Kriyananda's passing. And so Davey writes 1 week, I write the next week, and it comes out every Friday morning. And people around the world, there are 25 or 30,000 people that receive that and read it. And so we try to take a little theme, specific theme each week. Maybe there's a story, there's examples, there's some teaching to it. Hopefully there's some humor in it, and so on. An interesting little short read that is uplifting. And so in Touch of Joy, we did the compilation of those blogs for 2013 and 2014. And then Touch of Joy has the compilation for 2015 and 2016. And then we will continue working on year by year, we'll combine those.
And really, it's the name Touch of Light, Touch of Joy, the recent book. It's just to help people. You were saying, and I appreciate that in our conversation, you just feel like you're kind of put into lifted above the daily concerns. That's what we're trying to do. And that's what people, we get a lot of feedback saying, I really look forward to that little, your blog every week, because it just gets me back on track and I can deal with everything that's going on in my life more easily. So the book, it has a lovely cover, and if you're it's just a well done, very nice feeling to it. We have a nice publisher, Crystal Clarity, that we're working with. And if you're interested in finding out more about it, or you can also pre-order it, you can go to Ananda, ananda.org, or jyotishanddevi.org. And you can find out about it, and you can pre-order from Amazon. You can go to touchofjoybook.com, and you can find out more about it.
You also have other ways folks can get in touch with you as well. Obviously, you can get the weekly blog, A Touch of Light, at jyotishanddevi.org. You can also find out more about Ananda Village at ananda.org. And also, you can go to a website, and I'll have the two of you talk a little bit about this too, Expanding Light Spiritual Retreat, and that's expandinglight.org. Tell us a little bit about this retreat.
Well, we have a retreat here at Ananda Village that is open 365 days a year, and people from all over the world come, and they can take classes. They don't need to take classes. They can just do personal retreats. But we have several thousand visitors a year that come to the Expanding Light. And if you're interested in learning meditation, it's a perfect place to do that. If you're interested in deepening your own path, whatever that might be, it's a perfect place to do that. And it's just a way to get away from the busyness and distraction of the world and have a little time to get back centered in your own self, in a supportive environment that's beautiful, that takes care of everything, that has wonderful vegetarian meals. And so everything's taken care of for you so that you can focus on getting yourself centered again. Then you can go back and do your taxes, and you're just not so upset with your things.
And for we also have a very nice work study program called the Karma Yoga Program, which is for whoever is interested, and it's a very low cost, so it's a good way. It's a work exchange. You do a couple of hours of service at the retreat every day, and then there's morning and afternoon guided yoga postures and meditation and beautiful natural surroundings. You've been to the Ananda Village, so you know you can just walk through the 700 acres, lovely forested paths. And also I'll add, a lot of groups come and rent the facilities. They come at, you know, we can accommodate large groups. And if you block out time, we'll just make the retreat available for groups to come and do their own programs here as well. So it's really, it's created not just to promote our own teachings, but to promote the search for higher consciousness, whatever your path is.
As you two observe the world around you and as you travel around said world, your observations, are you still optimistic about humanity's future?
Yes. But it's hard sometimes to hold that optimism in the short term. But for instance, you read in the news of all the conflict, all of the wars, all of the killings, and you get to the point where you say, oh, it's just, nothing's ever going to change. But if you look in the long range, there's actually been far, far fewer deaths, certainly as percentage of population. Over the last 2,000 years, there's a declining flow of death that way. But in the moment, and especially because the media is focused on just gleaning the worst of the worst and putting it in your face, it doesn't seem that way. But honestly, as we travel and as you mix with people, mostly people are kind. Mostly people are good. Mostly people are caring. You know, you hear of violence all the time, but how many times have you personally seen or been involved in violence? For me, very, very few times. And so you have to shift your perspective a little and sift out that which is fed to you by someone else's agenda, and that which you actually experience yourself. And if you go to your own experience, then yes, I do have optimism. I see a certain kindness, and people are a lot of people are really working on themselves and working to try to bring positive change to the world.
Yeah, if only you're talking about the number of people that are saying, when people are asked in the United States polls, do you think of yourself as religious? And they say no, but I think of myself as spiritual. And that's actually, I think the numbers are like 65 or 70% of people that are saying that. And so I think we're seeing a shift maybe from kind of traditional organized religion. I think in the years ahead, we're going to see a shift from traditional organized politics as we know it. I mean, why are all these congressmen exiting? I think because they see the way politics is being carried on now is a dead end. And so, but rather than to say, okay, we've hit a dead end, I think what people are saying is we're looking for a better way to do this now. Mm-hmm. I saw a picture of a little girl about 12 years old holding up a sign that said, if you build a wall, my generation will tear it down. And so it's like there is underneath the chaos and the conflict and the discouraging events of our of the current news that's going on globally, mm-hmm. there's still an upward moving energy of people looking for something better, looking for a higher expression of humanity, because that's innate in every human being. And from the most corrupt politician to the worst criminal, nevertheless, there's a spark of divine consciousness in everyone. And I think what we're going through now is a time of a study in contrast. People are looking at, oh my God, is this where the world's going? And they're just saying, no, I don't want it to go that way. And so I think we're looking at a slide, two steps back before steps forward are taken.
And in fact, I think it's a really good opportunity because, you know, things are never very good. But if you just have a little sniffle, you live with it. But if you get really sick, then maybe you make some systemic changes in your diet or your exercise or your consciousness. And so I think the chaos that we see around us is forcing us to say that this way of living just is not working. We better make some real changes. And if we can do that, then we'll come out the other end stronger and healthier than we have been.
Well, that's the very quote that I use on this program, that we're looking for those new ways of living. The old ways don't work. Just look around you. And that we have a life raft, a lifeboat that will hold 7.5 to 8 billion people. There's only one condition. You have to be willing to let go of those old ways because we're not taking them with us. Yeah. And the other thing that I want to share with the two of you, I had a wonderful interview some time ago with a guest who travels to the Middle East quite regularly and other parts of the world. But he says that he holds these interfaith gatherings, and he's held them especially in the areas of Israel where you have the conflict with the Israelis and the Palestinians. And what he is hearing from the youth is, in essence, I paraphrase, Mom, Dad, that fight that you want me to be involved in, it's not mine. It's yours. I want no part of it.
Right.
So the young people, the younger generation is basically saying, we're not going that way. And if you want to do that and you want to go ahead and fight the parents of the other young people that are on the other side of that wall or that river or whatever it is, go right ahead. Have at it. But we have another way we're going to go. And when he shared that with me, I thought, wow, in that part of the world alone that's been going on for a couple thousand years, if not more, You have a part of the population that said enough is enough. It's not our fight. We're not the Hatfields and McCoys.
It's not just the youth. I saw a beautiful video of a women's march for peace in the Middle East with Jewish women and Muslim women, and they're tired of giving their children up to this incredible monster of war and watching them be destroyed. And they were joining together and dancing and singing for Women's March for Peace. So I think it's a movement that we're seeing in the youth, in women, in gay rights. So many people are just saying we've got to break down these barriers. It's just pulling the whole planet down. So, you know, really, I think it's not going to be an easy battle because the old powers don't give up easily.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, time's on our side.
Yeah.
You know, the old dinosaurs are dying out. Yeah. They seem, you know, totally powerful now, but their time has passed. They're kind of living it, and the new life expression of unity is coming to the fore.
Now, really, the real battle in consciousness is between one group, which I'll call the old paradigm, that has an us and them consciousness, and the new paradigm that has just an us consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's real interesting how, I mean, even when I was in the 70s watching stuff happening on the news, especially from Washington, D.C., and I thought, wow, when are these guys going to go away? And I thought, this wasn't supposed to be a lifetime job. Our founding fathers got to be rolling over in their graves because this was supposed to be a short-term thing. You go there, you serve, you are the servant, not the employee, not the boss, but the servant, and then you move on. And all I could think of was, boy, I can hardly wait, you know, wishing no ill will on anyone when these people die. Because then those concepts of that strength will eventually die because it gets more and more diluted. One of the things that I also thought of, too, was when you were talking about how, you know, the old ways, they tend to really fight back to try to stay and eventually do dissipate. And for some reason, the thought of a pot of boiling water. And the water is hot even underneath, but all you see on top is all of the bubbles. And that's all we're seeing right now is that bubbling on top. But the water is fine, and underneath it's calm and all that good stuff, even though it's hot. Not the greatest of analogies, but nonetheless, I get your point, and I hope our listeners do too, that even though it seems like we have a long way to go, we've come quite a ways in and of itself as a species, we just have to keep, so to speak, keep the faith, keep moving forward, keep meditating, keep practicing yoga, doing all of those things that will help us as individuals to raise our own individual consciousness. And then as we share that with other people in our lives, it begins to spread and we get a whole new consciousness. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking, of course, here on the program with Jyotish and Devi of Ananda Village. They have a wonderful new book out that is called Touch of Joy. By the way, I have Touch of Light not only in print, but it's also audible. It's also recorded. Did you also record Touch of Joy?
Yes, we did, and that will be available also, and so you can get it as a hardcover, a printed book, an ebook, or as an audible book.
I love listening to your voices. I plug my earbuds in and I start walking down State Street and I just listen to the messages each block as I go, and it's just it is about the message, but it's more, I'm getting to hear their voices and I miss being with them and being up there in Northern California and sharing the time and the space and hopefully one day maybe we will be able to spend even more time up there. Let me give our listeners, before we wrap up the program, these websites once again, jyotishanddevi.org. And I'm going to spell that out for you folks. You can go there to listen to the Touch of Light blog. And it is jyotishanddevi.org. To find out more about Ananda Village, which is A-N-A-N-D-A, that's ananda.org. And also, I love this. Maybe we'll talk about this as we wrap up here. Be the Change. Pledge your meditation hour at BeTheChangeMeditate.org. Talk to us. That's actually a .com. BeTheChangeMeditate.com. Tell us about that.
Yes, we've started a campaign to get people to meditate for world peace. So rather than just complaining, to do something about it. It comes from a quote from Gandhi that says, we must become the change we want to see in the world. And so Be the Change is you can pledge hours of meditation or you can just meditate. We do worldwide meditations every Saturday.
Once a month.
Well, every Saturday, but there's a guided one once a month. We have people from 92 different countries who join in on that. And so you can go to ananda.org or you can just Google Be the Change meditation and it'll take you to that website.
And also, folks, if you are being introduced to Paramahansa Yogananda for the first time, this is the first time you've heard an interview with myself and Jyotish and Devi. Well, I highly recommend that if you don't want to pick up a copy of Autobiography of a Yogi just yet, why not go yogananda.com? That's the website, goyogananda.com. You can find out more about Paramahansa Yogananda and his teachings, which it's interesting. Maybe that's, I say his teachings because they were written down and he was rather prolific a writer as well. But they're, as I mentioned earlier in the program, they're timeless. They're ageless teachings. They go back to the beginning and they go back to the divine. So, you know, it's just wonderful. So please check out goyogananda.com as well as ananda.org, because, we want you to learn more about this wonderful place. And, it may sound like I've been doing an infomercial for Ananda Village for the last hour or so. Well, it's because I've had the opportunity to experience this wonderful place and this wonderful space and these two beautiful people. And I encourage you to get more information and research. I have to tell you both that there are times when I just want to hit it, get in the car, go up there, and I just put me in a yurt for a month, okay? I don't want any electricity. I want no connectivity. Just put me in the yurt for a month. Because it would just be a wonderful place and space to be. And I want to thank both of you for taking so much time and sharing with us here on the program. This has been quite a joy, and I'd like to open it up to the two of you to share with our listeners any final thoughts or words that you might have for them here on the program today.
Okay, I'll just start. I also wanted to mention that if your listeners are interested in autobiography, we have it available as a free download as well from the website, so they can just download it and read it on a device. So I think just to say, Richard, I hope you'll come up more frequently than once every other year. You're very welcome anytime. But really, Ananda is a state of mind, and Ananda means joy. And I think everybody in the world, everybody is looking for happiness and joy within themselves. There are ways that you can actually find it, ways that you can learn to train your feelings, your emotions, your thoughts, so that you can find a stable, consistent state of inner happiness, no matter what's going on. We're not saying your outer life will be perfect, but your inner life, your inner state of happiness is something under your control. And I've seen thousands of people around the world using these teachings and techniques to really enhance and improve their lives. And we hope that you, as a listener to this program, will take advantage of the wonderful tools and teachings that our Paramahansa Yogananda brought into this world.
Yeah, I'll just add basically on the same theme that your happiness and joy level are under your own control. But you need to steer the vehicle of your life. It isn't going to spontaneously follow the curves and dips of the road and produce a safe journey. So in that same way, you need to steer your own consciousness, your own mind, and you need to decide that you want to be happy, to be joyful, and then do those things that bring happiness and avoid those things that kill it.
Once again, Jyotish and Devi, thank you for joining us here on the program. And I encourage our listeners to go to one main website, would be ananda.org for information about Ananda Village, as well as jyotishanddevi.org for the weekly blog. I think, folks, you would benefit greatly. Once again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.